This is Phil Ferrand, and I am driving home. It's Friday today. Yesterday was Thanksgiving. We were out all day, so I thought, well, I'll just go ahead and do this today as I'm driving home from grocery shopping. I'm also, just a second, I'm actually at Walmart, and I'm trying to get out of the parking lot. But there's a lady who wants my parking place. So I say I came so close. I was so close to buying. They've got a Samsung 32-inch curved monitor on sale for $168. And if I had been able to find out more information about it, I might have bought it. Because I've got a monitor that's going out at home. I might have just bought a pair to where I would have a match set. But it's only 1920 by 1080, et cetera, enough tech talk. Okay, so I am getting ready to head home. All is well. I kind of had a surprising week. Well, there were several things that went well this week. We did recurring this week, and my buddy, who'd been diagnosed with leukemia, usually watches over that. So it kind of fell to me and another programmer named Steve. Oh, and sorry for the audio. That's what I was going to say. First of all, sorry for the audio on this. I had planned to do the podcast today as I was driving home, and then I promptly did not put the recorder in the car. So I was like, oh, too bad. So I'm just doing this with my phone, but it will be fine. I've done this before. Anyways, so it was kind of an exciting week because we ran recurring, and it was interesting because Dad fell down on Saturday night. They called me and said, well, your dad fell down. He's just got a little scratch. We bandaged that up. He seems to be fine. I said, okay, that's great. So I went to see him on Sunday. He was really confused. I mean, he just was, in fact, at one point on Sunday, I had gotten him dressed, and then he just started walking away from me, and I was saying, where are you going, Pop? Where are you going? And he just kept walking. And he opened his door, went out into the hall. I'm thinking, where is he going? Where are you going, Pop? I assumed that he was going to the bathroom because he was, you know, trying to fix his pants as well. And I was like, whoa. And so I just kind of grabbed him at one point. And I said, Pop, the bathroom's back this way. And so I led him back that way. Anyways, so, and apparently he'd had a little trouble on Sunday wandering into other people's rooms. Because he was really confused. And then on Monday, I went by to see him. And he was in bed. I said, how you doing, Pop? He said, oh, I'm done. I'm finished. I'm not getting out of this bed. I said, oh, okay. That's fine. I said, yeah, I'm finished. I said, okay, Pop. Said, are you hurting anywhere? I'm hurting. And they gave me some Tylenol, but I'm still hurting. I said, okay, well, I can have them come get you some more Tylenol. But I said, you know, you took a tumble on Saturday night, and so, you know, that's probably what it is. We'll just see how it goes. And he actually started talking about the fact that, you know, maybe he just needed to move down to the Veterans Administration, because I've been telling him it's a beautiful, and it is, it's a gorgeous, gorgeous veterans home, it's gorgeous. So, he said, well, maybe I just need to move down there, he said, because, you know, they're equipped to take, they'll take care of me. And I said, well, Pop, if you want to move down there, that's fine, I can move you down there. But I said, let's just see how it goes the next couple of days, we'll go from there. So, as I have been doing for the last multiple months, I kissed him on the forehead, told him that I loved him, because you never know at this point, and, toddled on back home to do some editing, et cetera, et cetera. Monday night, Tuesday, or, well, Monday night then, I was thinking about that, and I was thinking about the fact he was wandering around, and then he was wandering into other people's rooms, and I was just wondering, oh boy, oh boy, oh boy, you know, where is all this going to go? And then Monday night, you know, there was a little bit of the extra quote-unquote stress of the fact that recurring was going to run in the morning, and if all went well, then, you know, by 7 o'clock we'd have the emails, everything would have gone through, done and done, yay. And if it didn't, we were going to have hours of trying to potentially figure out what was going on, etc., etc. Although I wrote these subsystems, I haven't been deeply connected with them lately, and so, you know, there's always the, well, okay, hope I can pull this off. But, of course, really what's going on is the flesh is just finding a place to dig in. It's just finding a place to dig in and, you know, just try to wreak as much havoc in your life as it can. And so I could feel the stress level kind of rising. And finally, I thought to myself, you know what? There is nothing you can do until tomorrow morning. Absolutely nothing. Either it's going to work or it's not going to work. Thinking about it isn't going to get it here any farther faster. Worrying about it isn't going to get it here any faster. The fact is, you have a lovely bed. And you live in comfortable situations. And you are about to get in your lovely bed and enjoy a great night's sleep. And so, I just laid down, went to sleep. Slept good, woke up in the morning, got my exercise stuff in, toddled downstairs, pulled it up, and it was in the process of running at 6:10, so I was like, ooh, yeah. So, you know, hopped on the Nordic track, did a few minutes on the Nordic track. By the time I got off the Nordic track and finished up, everything seemed to be fine, yay. So I went into work and told everybody, hey, it looks like recurring ran, yay. Ta-da-da. And then, I don't know, it was about 10:15 or so, on the 20th of November, I got a call, and I looked down, and I saw that it was from Maranatha, and I thought, oh, uh-oh, here we go, what is going on? Because the night before, I had seen some of the administrators at Maranatha, and we had chatted about that a little bit, and I had told them, you know, if this really starts going downhill in terms of Pop's mental awareness and knowing where he is and all that kind of stuff, I said, let me know. They have a full dementia unit down at the Veterans Hospital, and they said, no, we're not anywhere near that point yet. I said, okay, well, I said, I'm just saying that's available to us. But he likes to see me, and so that's why he's still here. So, I get this phone call on Tuesday, and I look down and think, whoa. So I pick up the phone, and Carrie, the nurse, had called me. She said, I'm so sorry for having to make this phone call. She said, but your dad has passed. And I said, okay. She said, do you want to see him? We chatted for a little bit, and then she said, do you want to see him before we call the undertaker? And I said, or the undertaker, funeral home director. And I said, yeah. I said, let me just run over there real quick. So I battened up the hatches and ran over there and gave him a kiss goodbye and told him I'd see him on the other side, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And, you know, kind of checked around, looked to see what we had in terms of getting stuff cleared out. And then ran over to the funeral home, got that process started. And then I went back into work because I was out of tasks. For the funeral, I was out of tasks, so there wasn't really much else to do. I had work to do, so I went back to work and we got started, because Dad was ready. He was ready, and it was time. You know, it was time. And so, he'd been talking about wanting to go home for a year now. You know, it's just time, it's time. Actually, yeah, a year and several months, ever since Mom died. So it was good. So I'm actually driving home now. I've got everything in the back in terms of, I got groceries because it's Friday. And then I have all the stuff that we cleaned out of his room, which really really wasn't much. It's, you know, some electronic stuff. It's a TV. It's a computer desk and a few miscellaneous things, a few pictures and things. But, you know, that's it. I mean, we had already whittled way down. So that's all under control. You know, he doesn't have any physical properties. Property except for the bank account. I'm a joint owner on the bank account, so that just shifts straight across to me now. And so there's no probate, there's nothing like that. We're ready to go. It's easy. We never did get that $30,000 check from the VA. I am going to call this afternoon because it's either, you know, it's either a problem with only the pensions that when you die, and I'm receiving a phone call on my phone, and I don't know if that means that it stopped. Just a second, I gotta see what's going on here. One moment. I am still going. Okay, unknown name, potential spam call. Yeah, great. Has anyone else noticed that we're getting a whole lot more? It seems like we're getting a whole lot more spam calls now. Anyways, so that's good to know. I can keep recording even if I get a phone call. Good to know. Anyway, so got all this stuff. Got the room cleaned out. We're having the funeral on Tuesday at 10 o'clock. My brother needed to be back in town this coming weekend. They got a big, big thing there. And so we are slingshotting my brother in. Monday night, he gets in at 11. I'm grabbing him from the airport, bringing him out to the house. We're going to crash, get back up. We're going to get back up. The visitation is at 9 o'clock. The funeral will be at 10 o'clock. We'll get through the funeral, and then we're going to have a family meal together. And then Wink and I will kick around a little bit, and I'll put him back on the plane at 5 o'clock Tuesday night. Done and done. So that's all good. The only other thing that I wanted to do today was I'm going to say a little bit at my dad's funeral. And I don't quite have it all yet. I've got the essence of it, but I don't quite have it all. So frankly, I just need to practice. And so I just thought, I think I used the podcast last time to practice for my mom's eulogy. And I'm going to practice for my dad's eulogy here. This isn't going to be all put together yet and may not be in sequence, but at least doing it out loud gives me a chance to see where I am on rhythm and pacing and all that kind of stuff. So, here we go. One of the things that has always fascinated me about humans is the influences that come into our life that lead us to make certain decisions, make certain life choices, pursue certain careers, all of that has always been fascinating to me. And I was really interested, again, to hear about some of those core things with my dad while I was editing together the video that we're going to be playing at the funeral. We put together a little memorial video, and it comes from an interview that we did with him in the 2000, I think it was New Year's Day on 2000. They were out at the house. They were both still pretty strong at that point. My dad and my mom set up a video camera, and I just started asking questions. So, and I edited some of those things together, but as part of asking those questions, I wanted to hear him talk about Leroy again. Leroy was my brother, dad's little brother, died young, and dad has always had an interesting relationship with Leroy. And even on the videos, when I asked him, so your brother Leroy, yeah, my brother Leroy, he was the good boy, and I was the bad boy. I mean, it was 2000, so dad would have been closing in on, whatever, 77. Dad, I'll get that one down. I won't ramble around in the funeral. So dad would have been closed in on 77. But even at 77, Leroy was the good boy, I was the bad boy. And Leroy had some amazing experiences with God. Really, Dad's first experience with faith was because of Leroy. When Leroy was little, I think he was 4 or 5, he developed an abscess behind his left ear, big abscess. And Bessie Farrand, my grandmother, her thing was, don't necessarily go to the doctors, we're going to the church. So there was a healing evangelist who was in. And so she brought Leroy up to the healing evangelist, and the evangelist prayed and asked Leroy, now, son, do you believe that God has healed you? And Leroy said, yes, he believed that God had healed him. The problem was, is the abscess was still there. So when they all piled in the car and they were going home, my dad and Margaret decided, okay, well, we're going to have to let him down easy because he's a little kid and he doesn't understand things. And so they started trying to start gently. Well, you know, not always everybody gets healed. And Leroy's response was, Jesus healed me tonight. Well, you know, sometimes Jesus healed me tonight. Well, why don't you just put up your hand and feel of it? It's still there. No, Jesus healed me tonight. And finally, he was so obstinate about him that it kind of made him upset. My dad would have been, I don't know how old at this point, but, you know, 9, 10, 10, somewhere in there. 9, 8. And finally, someone, either Dad or Margaret, said to him, well, you know, in the morning, you're going to wake up and you're going to see. You're just going to have to admit that you're not healed. They got up in the morning, there was no abscess. Said there was just a small scar, completely healed. Dad said that was the first time he'd really seen faith. Several years later, Leroy contracted scarlet fever, had mastoids. Of course, everybody's praying. Nothing seems to be happening. Eventually, is put in quarantine at the hospital. Of course, they go down and visit him, and Dad is watching all this, and there comes a day when they're down there and Leroy is signaling to them, because Leroy's 7 now, he's signaling to them, and they figure out that he's signaling and saying, I'm going home tomorrow. And Dad said his mom was trying to wave to him and saying, no, you can't come home, and he just kept insisting, I'm going home tomorrow. And later, there was a nurse in the church who worked in the quarantine unit. And she testified that the next day, Leroy started asking the nurses about the angels and started saying, can't you see them? Can't you see them? They're coming to take me home. And at one point, he just leaned up in bed, put out his arms, and he was gone. You know, Dad struggled with that in his life. Struggled trying to figure out why God would take Leroy, the good boy, who potentially could have done amazing things, and why he didn't take him. Because Dad, I've heard Dad said multiple times, he said, I just couldn't understand if God was going to take somebody, why he would take Leroy and not me. Interestingly enough, if you go back and you talk to the people who were in the church where Dad grew up, which you would find is that they didn't necessarily think much of what was going to happen with him, because he was just a really painfully shy little boy. He'd try to stand up and play the accordion in church, and his fingers would just crawl on top of each other, and he just couldn't get through it, couldn't, you know, say his lines in the Christmas play, couldn't. And even after he'd gone overseas and become a missionary and would come back and they'd show him all the pictures of the work and all the wonderful things God was doing overseas, you know, the dear old saints would come up and shake their hands and they'd say, well, it's got to be God, Billy. It's got to be God. You know, when it came to missions work, the first stirrings in my dad's heart were in World War II when he was on the island of Okinawa. He said that things were winding down. He saw the Okinawans and he felt in his heart that they needed Jesus and they needed someone. And he had actually started to talk to God about the fact that, well, you know, if I need to stay behind and be a missionary on Okinawa, I'll do that. But he went and talked to his chief petty officer and he said, no way. He said, Uncle Sam got you out here. Uncle Sam is going to get you home. If you want to be a missionary after that, you're a free man. Do what you want. Somewhere between that and the time Dad was mustering out, something changed. Because he also tells the story about walking forward in the line to the person who would sign him out. And he knew the questions he was going to be asked. And one of the questions was, are you going to go to school? And he already knew he was going to say no. He was going back to Flint, Michigan. And I think the company was the Severance Tool Company. He was going to hand grind tools. That was going to be it. He was going to get married, settle down, ta-da. So he got up to the front of the line. And the man said, are you going to go to school, son? And Dad said, I opened my mouth to say no. And I said, yes. And he said, it shocked me so much that I knew what it meant. I knew God had just changed something. Where are you going to go to school, son? Well, theological school, sir. So he went back home. Now, there's two things you need to know before he ends up at college. The first is that Brother Swift, who was the president of Emmanuel Bible Institute, just happened to come by Riverside Tabernacle and preach. And my dad thought, wow, that's a guy I want to study under. Because Brother Swift was amazing. Brother Swift, Brother Butler, powerful men of God at EBI. So Dad, that was in Dad's brain. And also sometime in there, Rosa Reinecker had come to Riverside Tabernacle. And she was a missionary to Ceylon, now Sri Lanka, then called Ceylon. And she showed her pictures of Ceylon and Dad just thought it was a beautiful place. He didn't have any inkling of going there, but he saw this gorgeous place and gorgeous people, and he thought, well, wow, that's pretty. So he ends up at EBI. One of the first things that happens is he gets put on kitchen duty, and he's peeling potatoes, and he feels like he's back in the Navy again, peeling potatoes, except now he's peeling potatoes across from a beautiful young Italian woman now named Elvira Rosa Ragusso. And he's thinking, wow, this is pretty good. I was, you know, kind of took a shine to her, but she didn't really take a shine to him, and that was it. So they're at EBI together, and a massive move of God comes through. It's like 8 days of revival where they would go back to the cafeteria to have something to eat. Somebody would pray. They'd get all enthused. They'd run back to the chapel. They would just have these long prayer meetings. And at that point, things are in motion. Mom and Dad don't know it. They don't know it yet, but things are in motion. God has a plan. He's looked forward several years, and there's a point in time that God is planning for. So, Holy Spirit speaks to my mom in this revival, calls her to Sri Lanka. Says, I want you to be a missionary to Sri Lanka. She says, okay. She says, well, I have to go alone. No, I have someone for you. Because the plan was in motion. Not long after that, Mom is working in the Bible bookstore. Dad is there sitting on one of the stools. He's just making conversations with her. You know, because he's, you know, just making conversation. And she says, I have a call in my life. By this time, she's looked it up. She knows where it is. She says, I have a call in my life and I think I'm called to be a missionary. And Dad just mouthing off. He's just mouthing off. He says, well, I'd like to be a missionary. And she said, oh yeah, where do you want to be a missionary to? And right at that moment, his mind flashes back to Rosa Reinecker and those beautiful pictures. Well, I'd like to be a missionary to Ceylon. And he sees her mouth drop open. And he thinks, uh-oh. He said, if I keep going with this gal, I may end up in Ceylon. So she closes the bookstore. Everybody's heard this story. She runs back up to her room. She gets down on her knees and she says, "Oh Lord, not Bill Ferrand." But they start falling in love. They get married. They have to pastor a church before they can do any missions work. Buddy tells Dad that there's this city, Boyne City, up in Michigan. It doesn't have a Pentecostal witness. Dad goes up there. He says, "Okay, we're going here." So they beat it up there. They start pastoring this church. God does great things. They build the church. They're just going fine. It's great. It's great. It's great. And eventually, Mom says, "What about Ceylon?" And Dad said, "Okay, we'll write them and tell them, you know, see what we need as far as applications and that kind of stuff." So Mom writes a letter. She writes a letter. It ends up on the desk of Maynard Ketchum, who was over that area at the time. And if I remember correctly, he picks up the phone and he calls her. "His sister Ferrand," he said, "your letter came today expressing your interest in going to Ceylon in missions work." He said, "Today we've also received a letter from the field of Ceylon. They need a young missionary couple to come sing on the radio because the plan's in motion. We'd like to offer you. We'll send you the applications. Prove to them immediately." So then they probably explained it to Dad, but he wasn't hearing. He goes, they go back, they're pastoring, they go to the district council, and one of the district council guys says, "Hey, Bill, how's the support raising going?" And my dad goes, "What? Well, are you raising your support?" And Dad said, "Raising my support? What? Well, Bill, you have to go around and preach at churches and ask them to support you." He said, "I have to go around and preach at churches and beg for money? I can't do that." Because this is my dad. He's bashful. You know, he's a little shy. Doesn't matter what he's seen. And he has seen, even then, some amazing things by this point. And the guy says, "Okay, look, Bill, just you and your wife, you sing tonight in the service." He said, "Let's see what we can do." So they get up. Dad plays the accordion. Mom sings. You know, they're a beautiful young couple. They have beautiful harmony, that kind of stuff. And the official gets up afterwards and he says, "This fine young couple is needed in Sri Lanka to sing on the radio. They have their approval, but they don't have their support yet. Can we go ahead and raise their support?" And in 15 minutes, they have their support raised. Because God has a plan and it's in motion. So they pack their stuff up. They get over there. Soon after Dad gets there, he's elected as the secretary of the field fellowship there in the first meeting he's in the first meeting. They're discussing a young man, young national named Colton, and he has a really big, long name. And I used to attempt it. I attempt it when I'm in the company of people who don't know, but I won't even attempt it. It's a really long name, and everyone just calls him Colton. They were talking about Colton and what to do with Colton. And there were some issues. I don't know what all the issues were. There were some issues. And Dad had preached with him, and he knew he was a really good interpreter. And Dad said, wait, you know, but this is Dad's first executive committee meeting. He said, before we vote on this and do this, he said, let me take him with me. Let me work with him for a little bit. So, you know, meeting's over, walked out, told Colton, "You're coming home with me." So Dad took him home. There was a really interesting thing that happened in the car as they were going back to Mom and Dad's house, because Mom and Dad were up front and Colton was in the back, and Dad felt a nudge, and he pulled the car over, and he told my mom, Alvera, he said, "Alvera, get in the back." He said, "Colton, come on up here with me." Dad had no idea. He hadn't been in the country long enough to know that the front seat up there sitting next to Dad was a place of honor as opposed to sitting in the back seat. And Colton, if I have the story correct, reported later that just that act of my dad sending his wife to the back and bringing him to the front indicated to Colton that this missionary was different. Colton stayed with my parents for months. Dad said the first thing you got to do is get up, read, pray your Bible, you know, read your Bible, pray. 3 hours, first 3 days, that's what you're going to do. Dad and Colton sat across the table from each other and broke bread together and talked about the things of God. Because the plan was in motion. Colton went on to do extraordinary things. Travel around the world as an evangelist. Became the head of the work in Sri Lanka. Reached out to the leaders in Asia. I think the outreach was called Impetus. Brought them in. Big meetings. I believe Colton's church was running 25,000 at one point. Or is running 25,000. I don't know for sure. Is running 25,000. Huge church. Just did great things for God. I'm sure Colton would have succeeded no matter what happened because he was a powerful man of God. But God, in his sovereignty and in his kindness and in his wisdom, chose to allow my dad to speak into Colton's life, to have the honor of doing that. And he only had the honor of doing that because he was in the right meeting at the right place, the right time, because there was a whole other series of things that had started 2 years, 3 years, 4 years before, where God was lining up the pieces because there was a plan. Now, Mom and Dad spent additional times in Sri Lanka, did a great work, went to the Philippines, were very influential in raising up many of the pastors in the Philippines, did a tremendous work there, went to Fiji, did a tremendous work there. So, I mean, that wasn't the only thing God accomplished, but it's just so fascinating to me to see all the influences that were at work, putting my dad in that room at the right time to influence a life. And you know, even after all that, my dad still kind of had that little resonance of Leroy was the good boy, I was the bad boy. But it didn't matter. It didn't matter that all the people at Riverside Tabernacle thought there was nothing that was going to come of his life. It didn't matter. Because God looked down and saw something else. He saw a young man who was willing, a young man with kindness, a young man who wanted to follow. And he, God, divinely orchestrated this wonderful, wonderful encounter. I think God is still at work today. He still moves. He still aligns things. One of the greatest joys of my life has been watching him align things in my life, cooperating with him. And if I want to try to encourage the people who are at the funeral with anything, that they should cooperate with God, listen for his voice, follow his path. Be kind, be gentle. Look for opportunities to minister for him. Because there's just extraordinary things that can happen. And the other thing that's amazing about all this is that, yes, Mom and Dad were the ones who went. Mom and Dad were the ones who were at those intersection points. But there was this whole other cloud of witnesses that gave money, that were here, were there, who put this in place, who put that in place. All of those pieces as well had to come together, and God was orchestrating all those things. So sometimes when we are cooperating with God, we have no idea what He's doing and what impact it's going to have for the kingdom. And that's yet another reason that we should just try every day to listen, to follow, to be as cooperative as we can, because God is moving and God has His plans and He will accomplish His good will, really, whether or not what we think of ourselves as what it should be, whether or not the people in around us think of us what like they should, and frankly, whether or not we cooperate with Him. Because He'll find a way to get done what He wants to get done. But if we cooperate with Him, we can look back on our lives and see wondrous things happening. We can see that because we knew Him, we did exploits. As far as I'm concerned, Pop did a great job. He done good. And at that point in the funeral, I'm just going to lean back and say, I'll see you on the other side, Pop. This is Phil Ferrand, and I have made it home.